Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Can't get enough of your Blackhawks? Tune in every single game day to Blackhawks pregame and flip back after the action for postgame live all season long, all 82 games, only on NBC Sports Chicago.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle. Mike's side with Charlie Romeliotis. How you doing, Charlie?
What's going on, Pat?
Well, I'm excited, buddy. We've been doing this podcast now for several months, and we've got real pucks, real hockey coming our way
real
Thursday.
Real stuff to talk about.
And the roster's basically finalized. Let's start, though, with we're going to have email bag questions from the listener, so we'll get to that throughout today's podcast. But let's start with Corey Crawford. I thought it was the most animated I've heard Joel Quenneville when talking about Corey and how he looked on the ice, returned on Monday to practice for the first time with his team. He had been practicing with Jimmy Waite and various coaches and players for a couple weeks prior to the guys hitting the ice. So we've seen him now the last 2 days, and did you concur? Did you think what you saw from Corey on the ice was as encouraging as what Q had to say afterwards?
Yeah, I thought the first couple weeks of him getting on the ice was more about conditioning than anything. They kept the shots low, and they didn't go high. But I think it was more that they wanted to get his legwork back, and he was doing a lot of skating drills with Jimmy Waite and going from post to post and things like that. And now it's getting him integrated into tracking pucks. It's kind of like when Kyle Schwarber of the Cubs, when he was out all that time and then came back for the World Series, and he went to Arizona to just track that. He just had like 1,000 batting practice, just so he can get a feel for the timing and the tracking. So that's kind of what it's like for Corey Crawford right now, is just seeing those pucks from different angles, seeing the speed and things like that. So I think all signs are encouraging. He hasn't had a noticeable setback, and they continue to say that he's going to return to action soon.
Yeah. So yesterday we had a chance to talk to Corey, and you asked specifically, are you having any symptoms? And his response was,
"Not." He said he didn't say directly to that. He just said, "I'm not 100%
yet." 100% yet.
So that could. And then Joel Quenneville, we asked later on, and he clarified it was game shape.
Game shape.
Whatever it is, Crawford seems like he hasn't had any noticeable setbacks where it would prevent him from saying, "Okay, we got to take it easy on it."
The fact that he's stacked so many days, and then the couple times he hasn't been on the ice and were scheduled, I think tells you that there have not been any setbacks that warrant sitting him down. A couple other things that came out. So Q on his weekly radio show mentioned it on WGN on the Steve Cochran show on Tuesday morning, and then I re-asked the question to him after he met the media after practice. There's a window that they're targeting. It's October 18th through the 21st. There's 3 games in 4 nights, mm-hmm. Starting with a game against Arizona on the 18th. As a possible time. Again, things could change, what have you, but that is sort of the window, and they don't think it will happen prior to that. So again, all these things, and we kind of speculated this summer, a late October return might be the best case scenario. So right now, that's sort of the timeline they're looking at, and again, these things could change. He is going to travel with the team here for mm-hmm. the first 2 road games, and again, they said don't read anything into that. They just want him working out, probably monitored. Probably also want to see, how he handles flying That's another a part of the equation when you talk about post-concussion symptoms.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I do think it's important that we make note that October 18th was kind of the – Joel Quenneville said it would be a perfect scenario. So I don't think necessarily that should be the target date of his return. I think that's going to – because then you – I think you followed up with it saying – you know, is it likely he returns before then? And he said it's unlikely. So that would be the best case scenario. He returns on the 18th. But I would probably assume that it would be more towards maybe the weekend or that week after, just to be on the safe side. But it's encouraging, though, that they have kind of a timeline in their head that they believe he's conditioning-wise, he's ready. It's just game shape, tracking pucks, and maybe a little bit more conditioning and getting those practices in, morning skates in on the road in Ottawa and St. Louis is part of it too. But I do think it'll probably be towards the end of October that he returns to the lineup.
You've got an email back question regarding goaltending.
James Hicks snuck in a late question here and asks, does Anton Forsberg clear waivers once Crawford comes back? And I think that's interesting because in my mind, it felt like Crawford is probably going to return more towards November than it was October. So this is a decision that they might have to make soon.
So here's what I think they will do. I think initially when and again, we're going to see how, I mean, we don't know. I mean, if Ward struggles and Anton becomes like, you know, the pseudo one filling in here until Corey gets ready to go. I think what they'll do is when Corey is ready to return, I think Forsberg will stay for a week or so until they are assured that things are good with Corey. They have the cap flexibility to do that. The roster flexibility, they would have to adjust with either a defenseman or a forward being sent down, or quote unquote injury or something. Time will tell on that. But I would think with everything that Corey has gone through in the last 9 months, that to not expose Anton through sending him down, that you would keep him up for, again, like a week or so until they're completely comfortable that, you know, he's taken a couple off the head, he's maybe been run by a big physical four, whatever the case may be, that he's kind of checked all the boxes and that, you know, he's doing fine in that department, then you would consider sending him down. Your thoughts?
Right. Yeah, because Joel Quenneville said before the season started that he has no plans on carrying three goaltenders. And Anton Forsberg as the backup, like if he goes a week without playing, that's normal for him. So it's not like keeping him on the roster until you want to make sure that Crawford is okay and that Ward is your backup. See, the problem is if Ward gets off to a rough start or whatever, like he's got a no movement clause. So I saw some fans that were already asking like, oh, well, what if Forsberg is the backup to Crawford? And it's like, well, you know, Ward's got a no movement clause. Forsberg has to clear waivers, and that's the more likely route. The issue is I feel like Forsberg is the type of goalie that would probably get claimed on waivers. So he's a decent backup. You know, last year he got thrust into a role that he wasn't prepared for. You know, he was expecting to be the backup goaltender, and then he gets thrown into a playoff race that, hey, you're the starter, and the goaltender behind Forsberg is Jeff Glass and JF Berube and all these guys that aren't prepared for it either. So it was really just on him. So I think in a backup role, he's a pretty good backup or a really solid number three. It'll be interesting to see. I feel like that's the conversation the Blackhawks are kind of having right now. And who knows, there might be injuries along the way where, you know, maybe if Forsberg or Ward gets hurt, where it kind of pushes along that timeline of having to go through waivers.
Yeah, this is a fluid situation. I mean, if for some reason, Anton becomes the guy here for the first couple of weeks and, you know, Corey comes back and everything is, you know, and they deem that Forsberg's the better option and they don't want to expose him. I mean, they could always release Cam. So, I mean, again, it's money, but they've got options. It's a fluid situation. We'll obviously all be monitoring it as, you know, the season gets underway. And, of course, we got to see how Corey handles everything. So, all right, let's move on from the goalie topic. Final cuts since we last did a podcast together. They've trimmed some things down. Sakura, Aitzel were a couple of the last to be sent to Rockford. We knew Boqvist was going to be moved to London. That was last week's news. Anything really surprise you with the kind of the final roster decisions?
It maybe would have surprised me at the beginning of camp, but seeing how camp unfolded, I'm not surprised that Adsel and Sakura did go down. But like we talked about when we were projecting our lineups in the summer, and we had Sakura and Adsel penciled in as top nine forwards. So it's a little surprising in that aspect. But you know, the Luke Johnson and David Kampf and John Hayden getting a full time role, or at least fighting for a full time role. Like all of these guys seized their opportunities in camp, whereas Adsel and Sakura, I don't necessarily think it's a demotion for either one, because they've played, I can count them on one hand on how many games they've played in the NHL. So they still need time to develop a little bit. I think it's disappointing because there's such a desperate need for depth scoring, and both of those guys provide it. So for them, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's a disappointing that they're not ready to go right now, but we saw it with Vinny Hinostroza last year, how he comes up and he's kind of like a midseason spark plug where he's averaging half a point a game, and it was one of the best 5-on-5 players. So maybe they can envision that with Sakura and Adsel coming up and kind of provide that extra trade deadline move from within. But it'll be interesting to see how the first half of the season shapes out, because there's not a lot of depth scoring right now.
I totally agree with you. I brought this up with Steve Conrad yesterday. I think they went defensive-minded forwards, especially initially, because they don't know exactly what they have in goal, and they don't necessarily know exactly where that defense, the D pairings, are at. So, if you have a choice between a sound defensive-minded forward who brings some physicality to your lineup over an unproven, who's a threat offensively but maybe lacks some things, I think they kind of sided towards the defensive-minded forward for now. Again, this may change if, like you said, depth scoring is an issue and they're getting nothing from the bottom six.
Right, and even Jeremy Colliton told Luke Johnson, I think it was last year, saying, hey, if you want to crack the NHL, like find a defensive role, like find a spot on maybe the penalty kill, because you always need a good penalty killer. So that's why Luke Johnson became such a good defensive player last year, and probably why he's on the roster right now.
And I kind of like the fact that like they rewarded guys who had good camps, and not just like preseason games. Like that's where I think, when we talked to Sakura last week, the day before, I think the day of his last preseason game, he was talking about the preseason games that he played in. The evaluation is all the time. The evaluation is practice and the consistency you bring, drill to drill, scrimmage to scrimmage, and then preseason game to preseason game. So I really think they rewarded guys. He singled out David Kampf as having one of the best camps he can remember in recent years of anybody.
Right.
So, like, to me, from a organizational standpoint, I like the fact that you worked hard, you busted your butt. It wasn't just in four or three preseason games. You busted it in, every single scrimmage and practice. Those guys were rewarded, and I think that sends a message to the guys that are trying to knock on the door. Get your act together. Bring consistency. Bring it every single day. That's the one thing Joel said. It was kind of his mantra at the start. Up the compete level all the time.
Yeah, and I even asked Joel Quenneville this, like, what do you say to the guys that got sent down that are maybe deserving of a roster spot? Because he mentioned the last three or four or five cuts that they made, they probably could have been here, but numbers-wise, it didn't work out. So, I asked him, well, what do you say to those guys that, like the Carl Dahlstroms of the world, of like, he's probably one of the best seven defensemen, but there's just, they went out and paid Brandon Manning, and then you bring on Brandon Davidson on a PTO, and then he signs a one-year deal. Like, you don't just sign those guys and then just healthy scratch them. You have to play them. But, these guys, go down there, continue to play your game, have a good attitude. He said respect the AHL and the league, that the developmental league down there, because it's a good league. So I think there will be many. I don't think this is like the final roster that, like, we're going to see a lot of call-ups.
Last year,
we didn't really see that.
Right.
This is the year that we're going to see a lot of – I feel like we're going to see a lot of people going up and down from Rockford and the Blackhawks.
And it might depend on the opponent. You know, if they're taking on a speedy, offensive-minded team, you may see them go down and bring up a Sakura and bring up Aitzel or whatever for offense. If they're taking on a bigger physical team, you're going to see the Martinsons, the Haydens, and things like that. So let's quickly go over the Hawks' projected lines. Again, you know, this is probably going to change maybe second period, but we'll see. This is the way they've been here now the last few days in the last preseason game. You've got DeBrincat, Toews, and Cahoon, Saad, Schmaltz, and Kane. Your third line is Kunitz, Anisimov, and Kampf. Your fourth line is Kruger on the wing, Luke Johnson at center, Andreas Martinsson, the right wing, and we're assuming right now like John Haydon is the 13th forward or the odd man out. And I think you had an email question.
Yeah,
about
we did. At Wyoming Zelda was actually she was watching your preview show last night with Steve Conrad as well, and saw that Luke Johnson was on the fourth line instead of John Haydon, and was asking what we thought of Hayden's camp and what do you think he needs to do to crap the lineup. Do you think he will rotate in the 13th forward spot? Is he going to be the guy?
Yeah, I think he will, and if he stacks a couple games together when he's in the lineup, I think you'll see him stick for a while, and there could be, you know, Johnson could sit or Martinsson could sit, or, you know, let's just see how, you know, consistent camp is once the lights are on, and Cahoon for that matter as well. So, yeah, I think for now, John Haydon is technically the 13th forward, but I could see him getting a spot. And again, the times that he played last year on that fourth line, I like what I saw from him. He brought a pretty consistent brand of hockey, and I thought that line actually was one of the more consistent lines last year. And I thought it was interesting this week to see Kruger on the wing and Johnson being the centerman on that line. What did you think about that move in particular?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when he answered your question about that particularly. He was saying Luke Johnson is going to be taking the faceoffs. Unless it's on the left side, Kruger is going to be taking, you know, because he wants him on his forehand. So I think that's what we'll see. I wonder if that'll change. I guess it'll really depend on the defensive zone face-off on a PK situation. If they're out there together, if they're on the left side, it'll probably be Kruger. If they're on the right, it'll probably be Luke Johnson. But this is the reason why they're carrying 13 forwards and only 22 players and not the 23, is because then you have to healthy scratch two guys a night or two forwards a night, I should say, if you have 23 guys. So it's difficult because John Haynes had such a good he took the Rockford stint last year with such a good attitude, and he took advantage of his opportunity here, and he's had a really good camp, and it stinks that he's maybe on the bubble as a 13th forward, because you want to reward guys for doing that, but also it's hard because you look at the other guys that have stuck out, like Cahoon and Johnson, and, you know, Joel likes Martinsson, you know, because he adds some physicality.
Marty.
So that's the difficult part about having a lot of guys that are kind of play a similar style, but they're all bubble players, but because you don't get to reward these players. But at the same time, I feel like part of the reward is, hey, you're in this conversation for our top 12 forwards. So as long as you're part of the conversation, you're doing your job.
All right, let's go to the projected D pairings that we'll see for that Ottawa game. Keith and Joakim Harju have been together for the last few days. Brandon Manning and Seabrook, Gustafsson, and Ruta, and we think that Brandon Davidson, you know, might be considered there the odd man out, or the seventh defenseman, so to speak. So, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see how Joakim Harju handles the NHL stage early on. I think it's good to see him face an Ottawa team that people don't have a lot of high expectations for. But then thrown right in the fire on Saturday night against St. Louis, and I think we all agree, and we'll get to that a little bit later on, but one of the more improved and could be one of those teams in the Central Division that earns a playoff spot.
Right, yeah, and I'm going to get to a mailbag question here, too, to kind of tie in, is Grace was asking, do you think we will struggle defensively this season with Connor Murphy out. I'm really interested because it makes sense that these seven defensemen are on the team right now, but when Forsling and Murphy eventually come back, this is like another pickle that they're in because of the the goaltending situation where, all right, well now who do you send down or like who do you have to go through waivers or whatever. So,
but Murphy, I mean, he's like what, December? I mean, like his
December now, but yeah. closer to like end of December.
Yeah.
Like
so probably. I mean, he's not in the part of the equation now for you know a long period of time, and then you'd have to think he's gonna, you know, to get up to speed, he may have to go play, you know, in Rockford or something like that. I don't know how they'll get him up to speed. I'm. You know, it's an opportunity, the injuries, and then, you know, I think the Forsling, we're still targeting early November.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting one because he's been out here before and he's been handling these big pucks and he's been doing some shooting. Like, his wrist looks pretty good. Now, Joel keeps disputing that and saying, you know, his timeline hasn't changed at all. But that's going to be the interesting part when he returns because then you have a decision to make. You know, do you send Joki Haru to Rockford to, you know, kind of reverse the roles with Forsling last year and be like, okay, we'll start the year, you know, get a few games under your belt, play with Duncan Keith on the top pairing, see what it's like, and then go down and get a feel for the system in the minutes, you know, or do you keep him on the roster and then you try to bump up someone, you try to bump out someone else. So it's
I think the play will dictate that.
Right.
And yes. You know, the.
Did last year too.
Yeah, exactly. So, but no, I think that, you know, to the question, yeah, I think it's a big question mark next to goaltending. To me, my biggest question is how are these D going to work, and are they going to be able to generate offense, and is that going to come at a sacrifice on the defensive side? And then I look at the Manning Seabrook pairing and. You know, not a lot of speed out there. So how are they going to match up against some lines that have a lot of foot speed?
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting.
Right. Yeah, because they didn't do themselves any favors by, you know, up front. Like we were talking about the depth scoring earlier, where it's going to come from. And you know, they got rid of Vinny Hinostroza, and then Edsel and Sakura are starting in Rockford, we thought they'd be in the top nine. So, you know, you. All the focus now is on goal and defense, but it's so hard too because there's nobody up front on the bottom six that can kind of alleviate the pressure in the defensive zone, you know, unless you view Marcus Kruger's line as that alleviating the burden on some of the top six like Jonathan Toews and some of the PK minutes. So something we'll certainly have to monitor within the first couple games and weeks of the season.
All right. You have any other email bag questions that
We have a couple, but they don't tie into this. But should we just get to them anyway? Okay, so we got Pascal saying, who do you think has the biggest bounce back season with the Hawks?
Yeah, I think we had this question a couple of weeks ago, and I went with Duncan Keith, and I still think Duncan is going to have a bounce back year. I think, you know, scoring was obviously a problem with only the two goals, and he only got that first one, you know, late into the season, and it almost seemed like it was an albatross around his neck to finally break through. But I wonder how, you know, it's going to be playing with, you know, a 19-year-old rookie. You know, will his game on the offensive side, like, you know, will it suffer because he's trying to make up for some defensive deficiencies that Joki Haru may have? So I'm pushing my chips in on the Jonathan Toews bounce back here. I just think he's one of the most prideful professionals I've ever been around, and I know that you know, the last couple of years have not sat well with him, and I think I'm really impressed with Alex DeBrincat and
the chemistry they've had.
Alex is going to help Toews' game, you know, more than you know, they expected Saad to. I just think that much of Alex DeBrincat. I think DeBrincat's a special player. So I'm hoping that line with Cahoon gets going. Toews had a good preseason and found the back of the net. So I'm going to go with the captain as the biggest bounce back.
Yeah, I'm surprised by how well that DeBrincat Taves line has worked, or as particularly those two, how they feed off each other. The in the last preseason game, I know it was just against AHLers with Columbus, but they were just feeding off each other, and they were generating scoring chances. Now, their possession numbers maybe weren't great, but they scored Taves had two goals the preseason game before, so they're generating these scoring chances, and they're kind of capitalizing on them. So Taves is a good pick. Earlier in the summer, I said Brandon Saad, just because I had written a piece right at the end of last season saying how all the underlying numbers were favoring him, but it didn't translate on the actual statistics that matter in goals, assists, and points. And I think there's going to be a little bit of a market correction there. But at the time, I was assuming he was going to be playing with Jonathan Taves. So now that he's playing with Schmaltz and Kane, there shouldn't be any reason that he can get 55 points, 50 to 55 points in that range, if he's playing on that line on a consistent basis, rather than playing on that line in desperate times where Joel's just trying to mix things up. So if that happens, it'll be hard for Brandon not to score 50 or 55 points.
Yeah, I hope he realizes, you know, he got off to a fast start last year, 6 goals in 6 games, and then it was 12 goals the final 76.
Yeah, so, and 29 points the rest of the way.
Yeah, so it was his lowest point total of his career if you take out the lockout shortened season of 2013. So hopefully he will have a bounce back year. And again, this it's an interesting role. Though, you know, we talked to the guys this week, the underdog role was thrown out, and that's something that this team has not experienced since probably 2008. Mm-hmm. Or so, right around the time that Kane and Johnny were rookies.
Right.
That, the expectations, and at that point, they were starting to come a little bit. But right now, you know, the expectations are a little different. So it's a different role. The target's not as big on the back. I still think you're going to get – I still think you've got major brand power. And there are certain buildings where I think – The opposition, if it's between bringing it for Columbus or bringing it for the Blackhawks, I think my feeling is the Blackhawks get the better game from the opponent.
Right, and I think we're also going to see inflated numbers by the top guns on the power play, because last year they were just so bad on the power play. They couldn't get anything going, and they've obviously unveiled this new 1-3-1 look, and I'm not more so hung up on the 1-3-1 look, although like it's been working this preseason, I like the idea of just loading up that first unit. And I know we talked about it in the last podcast we did, but the fact that these guys are pretty much going to be on here on the ice for, I would say, about a minute and a half of the 2 minutes, they should all see a spike in offensive numbers, particularly DeBrincat and Saad, particularly Taves and Saad, whose numbers weren't very good offensively in that area. So I think that's also where we'll see the benefit of them statistically.
Didn't we have a question about the division?
Yeah, we did. Brandon Fisher asked, where will the Hawks finish in the Central Division this year?
Well, they were last year with just 76 points. And, Colorado made it with 95. So they need to find 20 points, which here's my thought on that. Okay, if Corey Crawford had been able to play the rest of the season at the level he was playing at, I'm going to say he would have had 6 of those goalie wins the rest of the way.
That's really funny you say that, because I looked at the number. War has obviously been a big discussion in baseball. Hockey also has a war. It's another analytics website, and they had Corey Crawford, his WAR was around 6. So
okay.
He would have contributed to 6 more wins for the Blackhawks.
Okay.
So that would have been what, 12 additional points?
12 additional points. And again, it would not have, he probably had some goalie wins, prior to that as well. So I'm giving him maybe a little more than the 6, maybe more like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But, so let's just say you get 12 more points from goaltending play. And then, the Sods and the Taves and Schmaltz steps up, and the back end gets some production, and the power play comes. It's not crazy to think that you could find 8 more points to get you to that to that number of 20.
Yeah.
Which gets you in the mix. And, you know, just as I look at it, I mean, to me, Nashville still looks like a playoff team. I know Winnipeg lost Stastny. I still think they're a tough team to play. I think they're the two best teams by far in the division. You know, I could see Minnesota taking a step back. I could maybe even see Colorado. Colorado lived on a great power play last year. They re-signed Nieto, Ian Cole. We'll see. But, I mean, to me, St. Louis is the team that I think could jump into the mix. And I think, you know, to me, they're the team that, you know, the Hawks will be vying with to try to jump a couple of teams to get back into that conversation.
Yeah, so I think Winnipeg and Nashville are pretty much locks. Like, they're going to be – it seems like they're going to finish top two. And it seems like St. Louis is going to be in that three range because they just made so many offseason acquisitions where they're so deep down the middle. I feel like the wild card for me is Dallas. They got a new coach that all the players are buying into this new system, and it's going to benefit these offensive guys like Sagan and Ben, and they should have pretty good offensive numbers this year. So if that happens and Dallas gets the four spot, like the Blackhawks would be in the 4-5 range, if anything, like the best case scenario.
Right.
But here's what I will say about the Hawks. If we're looking for reasons to be optimistic, they had such bad special teams last year, and they actually had a pretty decent penalty kill when Crawford went down, and then things just went completely sideways and off the rails, where everything just wasn't going their way. The power play wasn't going their way. The penalty kill, the goaltending, the defense. They had DeBrincat as a rookie. Like, all these factors. So this year, if you get Corey Crawford back and he returns to, I don't want to say elite form, but if he's 80 to 90% of what he used to be, they'll be okay goaltending wise. And if your special teams can just be average on both sides, like, that could be enough to get you a few extra points and in that wild card conversation.
Yeah. I think they got to be better than average. I mean, we talked about the numbers last year on the power play. I mean, you know, the final four teams were top 11 and above, and three of the teams were, you know, top 7 and up.
Right.
So I that's not coincidence.
Well,
so
you've got to score the timely power play goals.
Yeah,
I'm with you
on the load up thing. Like, you know, that's a distinct advantage you have on the opposition. I have no problem giving extended time to Hall of Fame guys to try to pump one in, and, you know, giving them 80% of the power play time, or lo and behold, you know, almost all of it.
Right. This is a complete side note, but I don't like the idea of Nick Schmaltz on the penalty kill. Like, that's a guy that just let him use all that energy up front with the forwards and the power play specialists, where he's using that energy, because I don't like the idea of him coming off the PK and he's already gassed from killing a minute penalty, and now he's got to go play an offensive role with Kane and Sot, you know. So,
yeah.
Anyways, but it's really hard to predict where the Blackhawks are gonna finish in the Central, because I know we've talked about a lot of the ifs up front, but it's like we're expecting, okay, well, when is Corey Crawford gonna return? If he returns at this point, okay, well, is he gonna return to form? And then if he does return to form, okay, well, then where does that leave the rest of the team? And if he doesn't return to form or whatever, then you could see the Blackhawks maybe, I don't want to say pack it in, but then they're gonna realize, okay, you know, we have a much larger uphill battle to climb than we thought before Corey Crawford was gonna return. So
yeah, I mean, to me, they're vying, at best case scenario,
four or five. Yeah.
And usually the four spot gets you in the playoffs.
Right.
So if things break their way, if a lot of the question marks go in their favor, if Corey returns to being Corey, then, yeah, I could see them make a run at the four spot. But again, we'll wait and see, because there's a lot of question marks, and a lot of them will be answered in the first month or so of the season.
Yep.
That's going to do it for the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Charlie Romeliotis, you can follow him on Twitter at
C. Romeliotis.
Spell Romeliotis for
everyone. Romeliotis.
And, of course, you can see all his work, NBC Sports, Chicago.com. He'll be with the Hawks in Ottawa on Thursday night. Will you be making the trek to St. Louis?
I will not. I'm standing up in a wedding that will prevent me from going to St. Louis. Okay. But I will be in Ottawa, and I will be at the Toronto game.
All right. And, of course.
And we got the red carpet ceremony
on Sunday. Well, hold on. We've got pre and post, brother.
That's right.
All 82. Don't bury the lead.
That's right.
Our first game on NBC Sports Chicago is Saturday, the St. Louis game. But we'll have pre and post for every
beautiful
darn Blackhawks.
And you can live stream it.
Live stream it as well. Every single
one of them.
So
that's great.
We are your one-stop shop for all things Blackhawks. That'll do it for the Hawks Talk podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.